Okay, time to wake up. Wakey, wakey. I'll ask the questions here.
That was a statement.
I'm warning you.
And why am I tied to a chair? Surely a bed would be more fun.
Keep dreaming, Taylor. Besides, I've been happily married for the last 5 years.
What? Who are you?
I told you I will ask the questions.
Well, go on then.
What?
You've said you'll ask the questions twice since I regained consciousness, but you've yet to ask me a single relevant question.
Okay. If that's the way you want to play, I'm game. What happened to you?
What happened to me? I'm not the one who knocked out their friend and tied them to a chair and is interrogating them.
Oh no, you don't get to deflect like that. I've been studying you, Mr. Taylor. Of you and your compatriots, you are the least suspicious of me, and you are more likely to give me answers.
And you think tying me up is going to help that?
The Ben from my dimension isn't quite so sure of himself, but you.
Your dimension? What the hell are you blathering about?
The explosion in the laboratory? The transporter? You kidnapped me from my dimension and brought me here to where everything is the same, but just a little bit different. Mike is a brunette here, where to me, Mike is a peroxide blonde model who no one expects to be a Rangers fan. Your Brian is a genius and cares about Sentai. Mine would rather alphabetically list the reasons Power Rangers are better than any Sentai. But you, except for your age, you're exactly the same person. I thought if anyone was going to see I didn't belong, it was you. I'm a genius, an actual, factual, certified genius, and it doesn't take one to figure out that I'm in another dimension. That much is obvious. The thing I can't figure out is why.
Sasha, is that even your name? I legit have no idea what you are talking about.
You kidnapped me.
I'm the one tied to a chair.
I'm not the villain here. I'm the hero.
Everyone is the hero in their own story.
Villains aren't.
Especially the villains.
Well, it's a little too late for regrets.
Sasha, I don't.
The others I can understand not getting it. Not seeing it, not seeing that I was different, but no, you just acted like nothing was different. With Mike and Brian, I tried to act normal, like I always would, but you, even with the age difference, my bed would have. How do you not see
See what? You were acting just like our Sasha when we interacted. And the others, they could tell something was wrong.
it? But I'm a genius.
Yeah. And our Sasha's pretty damn smart, too.
Smart and genius are two
Not
completely
that different to an idiot. See, the thing I realize about myself on our team, I'm the idiot. Brian built the command center in like half a year. Sasha has a literary mind like no one else I know. Mike, organizational powerhouse. The others are all so much smarter than me. I accept that my job is to show up and tell jokes, make funnies. Me? I have words, and it's about all I've got. The other three rangers are really clever people. I'm just Schmucko the Clown.
All I wanted you to do is to help me.
Which I can't do tied to a chair. Besides, if you wanted help, why not kidnap Brian? He's the genius that created the teleporter.
You were the easier target. Less likely to work out a means of escape, and more likely to get the ransom I want.
Ransom? What ransom?
To force Brian and Mike to send me home.
Did you consider, asking?
You don't ask evil for things.
Sasha, you are being paranoid. That explosion was months ago. Since you arrived, right? What have you seen that makes you think we're evil?
You brought me here against my will.
Oh, I think we're a little beyond that now, don't you? It was quite clear that day in the lab was an accident. You've been too wrapped up in figuring out where you are and how to get home that you haven't been looking at things objectively. Untie me, and I can help you.
You could be trying to trick me.
Look, if you are, as you say, from another dimension, it stands to reason that our Sasha is in your dimension, right?
I suppose.
So, if our worlds are so vastly different, she is probably having a hard time in yours, too. So, as her friend, all I want to do is bring her back and send you home. It's win-win. And Mike and Brian are even more likely to help you if I am the one asking.
They should be getting my ransom demand soon. Right on time.
Untie me and let me talk to them.
I don't know.
Sasha, please. You want to be the hero in your own story? Prove it.
Fine. Here. Bring it up on the big screen.
Sasha, what have you... Ben? Are you okay?
I'm fine, my dude. Few rope bones, but I'm fine.
We got a ransom note? Said Sasha had kidnapped you.
It's complicated?
And now it's less of a kidnapping and more of a miscommunication.
What's going on here?
Turns out you were right. Sasha was acting weird. Because she's not our Sasha.
Not our Sasha? Then that means...
Right. It means we have to get our Sasha back. Because if I'm reading the subtext right, she's not exactly going to be happy over there. How are the teleporter repairs coming along?
I was going to say it meant that my multidimensional theory is true, but your point is well made.
Sasha and I are headed back to the command center. Brian, Mike, start brainstorming on how we can send her back. We'll meet you in the lab. Okay, we're here. Brian, put the laser rifle down.
Not till we know that you're okay. How do we know that we can trust her?
Yeah, she kidnapped you.
Ben and I have been through this. I was laboring under the misapprehension that you all had pulled me out of my dimension and brought me here with some nefarious scheme in mind, and it was so rooted in my brain, and I was so fixated on getting home that I ignored all the actual evidence. So you all aren't evil, you're just different. That event that pulled me off the street while walking my dog and dumped me in a slightly singed lab was an accident.
So where's our Sasha?
Running theory, in my place, living my life.
Unless the displacement caused by the explosion was the epicenter of a ripple effect that caused a cascading displacement. Every Sasha in every dimension switched places, which would reduce the possibility of us recovering our Sasha too.
Not good. Got it.
By my calculations, the only way to get me home, and by extension get your Sasha back, is actually quite simple. It's just the power requirements are way above what the Command Center lab can produce.
So, how do we get the power?
There's only one thing I can think of that could generate that much power.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait.
Pointing out once again, I'm the idiot here. Will you incredibly smart people bring me up to speed?
Okay, look. In order to generate that much power, we have to review something really, really
polarizing.
What are you talking about?
You aren't gonna like it.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Voices from the Grid, where this is literally the episode of my sanity going to the wayside.
Yeah, your sanity.
All of our sanity and good storytelling everywhere.
I taste purple.
I am the White Ranger, Michael, joined, as always, by our good friends, the Blue Ranger, Billy.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, Brian.
Hi!
This movie's already destroyed me. Hi, Brian.
Come Zio, I'm gonna have no powers. Hey, everybody, how's it going?
The Red Ranger, Sasha, who ironically is wearing green and I'm wearing red.
Well, you are White Ranger, and I just got the shirt, and it looks really cool, so why not? But yeah, hi, I'm Sasha, I am the Red Ranger.
And, of course, Mr. Black Ranger, Mr. Ben Taylor. How you doing, buddy?
It's me, ya boy, Ben Taylor. Still hopped up on them good painkillers. Prescription.
So I just want to put this out there of I hate you guys with love.
Why?
Wait, what do we have to do with this?
What?
But I'm grateful that you're not making me do the quick rundown of this movie because I want
to
kill myself.
I want to go back to the hate thing. What have we done to draw your hate?
Yeah, seriously.
I haven't talked to you.
I said hate with love.
It doesn't matter. It's still got the word hate in it.
Yeah, right.
So
are you sure you know what that word means?
See if I buy you dinner. You keep using this word.
So what many people don't know is that this episode is technically airing out of order because the original airing sequence would actually have this episode air after our season 2 finale. So if you're looking for this episode in our season 2 section, is actually click on the movie logo on the main VFTG page. That's why I hate you guys with love, because we're doing this out of order. But it's okay. It's okay.
In arbitrary order, it's fine.
All right.
You live.
I know.
For something that's not in canon, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what was supposed to be canon?
But it's not.
No.
Blah, blah, blah was supposed to be. Coulda, shoulda, woulda, shoulda, butta, woulda, utta, isn't.
Bravo. Bravo.
And that fact that it is not canon is the only thing that have kept these four Rangers sane over the last like day or so while we've been watching this movie.
Then just drop that.
We suffered so that the rest of fandom did not have to suffer, but they've already suffered anyway.
I mean, I saw it in theaters when it came out. I enjoyed it as a kid.
Same. Yes,
as a kid, that's fine. You're not a kid anymore. And if you showed that to a kid now, they'd be like, what?
To be honest, I remember when my brother and I first watched it, it was like 2002, maybe 2003, and I didn't like the movie back then any either. It was just sort of there and it didn't make any sense, and as a kid you're like, wait, but this isn't part of this, like, As a kid, I was confused because I wasn't, like, I didn't understand how this fit into the Power Ranger story. It's not like it had a disclaimer that says this is not canon. The word canon didn't even exist in my head unless you were talking about a literal, you know, canon. So I remember watching it as a kid and just being confused by it. And that confusion led me very much to disliking it. The only thing I blocked it from my mind. The only thing I remember was Zordon lying on a slab and dying or not dying. I thought he actually did die.
I think he did, and then they brought him back to life.
Yeah. Well, again, we'll get to that.
Yeah. So I got a few things. I know, Ben, you've got notes. Brian's got notes. Sasha's got notes. And we probably don't want this to be a 2-hour, 3-hour, 4-hour smorgasbord.
I know it could be, but let's not.
Yeah. So let's get right to it with while in the world of Power Rangers, because that was a very Star Wars-esque opening with the text scrolling up. It's painfully obvious that the Rangers love the color white, and I don't mean Tommy's Ranger color either. When it comes from the skydiving suits to what they wore while rollerblading and investigating the construction site, they wear so much white. And what are your thoughts on the clothing that the Rangers would wear in Angel Grove, and how painfully obvious does it showcase them as the Power Rangers to the rest of the town? Brian's got his hand up. I didn't know we had the hands up feature, so we'll go with that.
Okay, so I've got two answers here. One, so having lived in Texas and being around the same kind of equatorial center as like Australia, New Zealand, it's hot. They want to wear clothes that are probably, like, during filming, they're probably going to want to wear, you know, clothes that are going to reflect sunlight. So that's probably why they did that. Also, from, like, if you look at the color grading of the film and, like, how they designed everything, you know, on the series, they have a black backdrop for the command center. But if you look at the command center, like, where they are, it's like, you know, it just pops a little better if they're wearing white. So I think that that's why they did that. It's literally, like, to keep them from, you know, overheating, and also because it looks better against, you know, all the backdrops that they have. So, and, I mean, as far as, like, being painfully obvious at the Power Rangers, that's been since day one. So,
I don't know. It felt
more. Power Rangers have, one of the Rangers wears the color red. Jason and Rocky always wear the color red. I wonder, could that be a thing that is related to each other? Nah.
But the thing is that, like, in the show, they have other stuff that kind of, you know, can sometimes take away from their colors that they wear. Right. Like, when you look at the skydiving suits, they made the skydiving suits almost look like Power Ranger outfits.
Yeah, that's true. They did do that.
Right. Here's the thing, right? And I tend to do this to a lot of Mike's points, but I'm just going to come here and step on it, right? The fact of the matter is, in the TV show, you have a lot more time over the course of a series to recognize the visual outlines of the characters. Right, you don't have that opportunity with the movie, because you also have to assume that the movie is going to reach an audience that the TV show isn't.
Right.
Right. So the very first thing you need to do, because with the skydiving suits in particular, because you aren't able to see the outlines of the characters, you can't see Tommy's ponytail, you can't see Adam's haircut, you can't see Aisha's braids, you can't see Kimberly's frame, they need to be more quickly recognizable as the Power Rangers, right? So that's why those suits were designed in that way. It's purely a wardrobe thing. Second of all, the reason why you're going to get a lot more white on the characters in the movie is purely because they want them to stand out from the background. Doesn't make them stand out as the Power Rangers, but there's very little white used in the background character outfits. Also, white, good. Dark, bad. Third of all, you'll notice that the amount of white they were wearing is somewhat in balance with the amount of color they were wearing to the actual Power Rangers suits. So it was much more of a quick visual reference when you saw them together. It was a lot like they were wearing the Power Ranger suits. It doesn't make it obvious to the people in Angel Grove. It doesn't make it obvious to anyone else. Like, if I just saw a dude walking down the street wearing white and red, I'm not going to go, oh, he's the Red Ranger, right? But it makes it obvious to us as the audience.
Right.
Right? It's nothing to do with making them stand out from the crowd in the kayfabe of the show, right? It's for the audience. And that's purely it.
As always, I tend to agree with Ben more often than I think we disagree. So I definitely agree with that. I also think one of the things to note is that they wanted the Rangers to stand out because they're the teacher, they're the heroes of the movie. So you want us, the audience, to be able to recognize them. The other thing is like, the movie's tone is going to be different regardless. Visually speaking, the colors are going to be different because, first of all, it's filmed differently than a TV show, right? A TV show was filmed in order to fit into a TV screen, right? This movie was probably filmed with different cameras in order to get that CinemaScope, that like movie theater, like positioning, what sizing or whatever you want to call it. So that might also be a part of the reason why it looks a little bit jarring to us.
Right. So with that, what did you guys think about the different look Goldar? Because he kind of got, I don't know, he got a little bit more blocky, in my
generic
opinion.
Generic American knockoff Goldar.
And then they also did a little bit more to Lord Zedd. They didn't do anything to Rita. They kind of 86'd a Squad and Babu for some pig that they actually never said his name once in the entire...
Yeah, they did. It did. His name's Mordan.
Yeah, I was about to get to his name, but I don't really remember where they said his name.
Ivan literally refers to him when they're in the chemical factory.
I must have missed that part when I was writing a note, but...
He's like, Morden, go do this.
Yeah. I liked how they made Lord Zedd's brain actually pulsate. Mm. That was actually a neat little feature. It gave Lord Zedd a little extra. But, being a kid, I mean, look at it from the perspective of the kid. You see, like, the bad guy is like, he's got these little extra things to him. It's like, ooh, that's cool. What do you think about those little bit of looks before we hop back to the Rangers? Because there are a few specific things on the Rangers that we got with their outfits and some power-ups.
Yeah, so I still maintain my generic American knockoff Goldar. The pig character confused the crap out of me. I was like, who is this? What is he doing here? So at first I watched the trailer for the movie and I thought that the pig character, what was his name again? I'm sorry.
Mordant
was like Ivan Ooze's like lackey or something, but then he wasn't. He was like the crow's costumes that we're going to see later on in Power Rangers. So I was really confused about who the heck this character was and why he even existed.
It's like they just took Squad and Babu and turned it into Mordant.
But he doesn't really do anything anyway. He's just kind of useless.
That's what I was going to say. It felt like they didn't want to bother with writing for two separate characters, so they just kind of fused Squat and Babu together into this one-off character that wasn't even going to show up in the series. They're like, eh, that's fine. Just do that.
The kids won't know the difference.
For me, I kind of dug the Zedd redo, but the others I couldn't care less about, really. Goldar looked horrible. Mordant looked awful. Zordon looked awful. Alpha looked awful.
You know, I will say Zordon's face in the tube I actually like a lot better than the show. Because he got a bit more expression in his face.
He looked, I'll give you that. However, my counterpoint is he sort of just looked like a creepy ghost. of a man in, like, it just, it looked really weird. And I get they used a different actor, obviously, but it was just like, it was, I think it was too different. And while, yeah, he was more expressive, that just because we could see more expression doesn't mean it really gave the character anything.
You know what I think I just realized with Zordon, like when I was watching it last night, in the movie, because they're using film instead of, like, you know, just a television camera for his face and obviously for the rest of the movie. What I realized why he looked familiar, he kind of looked like, remember in Superman, the guys who were, you know, telling General Zod, like, you know, the council that's calling him guilty? That's kind of what that looked like to me a little bit. I was like, it was weird. There were some weird shadows going, and it was an interesting effect.
It was trash.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
I'm not going to sugarcoat my feelings about this. I'll tell you my feelings about this movie right up front. There are literally two good things about this movie, maybe three. One, the use of lighting in this movie is phenomenal. Two, Ivan Ooze's prosthetics. Three, the guy that played Ivan Ooze. Everything else in this movie is trash.
And I'll agree with you, man.
Accurate.
So speaking of trash, we have the Power Ranger outfits, the actual suits, which I don't envy them at all for having to wear those, because those look awful to wear.
They were made out of leather.
Yeah. And apparently they broke down a lot.
And it was also super hot in them.
Yeah. But they did actually come with very specific power-ups, though, and weapons. So Aisha got headlights in her helmet. Rocky got a power scope tracker in his helmet. For weapons, Billy got the Stega Stinger.
Isn't really a weapon, it's a grappling hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's able to use it as a weapon at the same time. And then Kimberly got the Thunder Whip. Whereas Tommy got the I can do the most insane kicks that is clearly me on a cable spin kicks in the world, and Adam actually got nothing.
Well, Tommy,
why did Kimberly need a whip?
Tommy's power up was Saba. Right, because it flies around and shoots lasers out of its eyes, and like, it's like, why bother sending the Power Rangers at that point? Just send the sword.
Yeah. Also, I gotta ask. Like, I get it's the 90s and Indiana Jones was popular and whatnot, but like, why did Kimberly need a whip?
All right, so it's a trope thing, right? A lot of female protagonists in video games are going to have one of three weapons, a bow, a whip, or staff, right? And that's just the way that works, right? And
she had a bow in the show.
Right, hang on. This is also around the time where, how am I trying to explain this? At least I noticed it being a little bit more grown up than the rest of you at the time. There was a movement against showing missile weapons on TV and in movies. This is around the time that they remade E.T. to take out all the guns and put in cell phones. That happened.
I believe you. I'm just horrified.
So I think it was partly a movement towards the that, but also when it was originally pitched, it wasn't pitched as a whip. It was pitched as the Raptor ribbon to go with her gymnastics, like as rhythmic gymnasts use ribbons. That is how it was pitched. Originally was the Raptor ribbon, because everything else is the Stega Stinger and the pat. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I don't think it was intended to be a whip originally. It just became that way when it was easier.
Fair.
Because it's easier.
And not only that, but like, they don't have any of the actual power weapons. Like, the power sword's not there, the lance, the daggers, none of them are there. They don't have their power cannon, but obviously, like you said, Ben, you know, with the kind of removal of the missile projectiles. So that's kind of also why you got this. But Ben, we got to have a serious conversation here.
Okay.
Adam didn't get any power-ups.
Look, I'm as upset as the next bloke. But let's be honest, he's the only Power Ranger that doesn't need them.
But also, I got to ask you this serious question right here. How soon into the film did Adam Park show up?
1 minute 41 seconds!
And is that acceptable?
Most of which was the opening Star Wars style crawl. He's literally in like the... Like when they're in the plane, he's like the third Power Ranger to stand up or something. Yeah, it's...
Completely acceptable?
I will call it acceptable, except for the fact I had to sit through the opening crawl, which was complete tosh.
Yep.
And establish... And that opening crawl itself establishes the movie isn't canon.
It also establishes that there was a prior team of Power Rangers.
That's why it establishes that the movie isn't canon.
Yep. So...
Because until that point, until that point, these were the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers were the Earth's first Power Rangers. And by establishing that there had been a team 6,000 years ago, it broke from canon.
Yep.
Could we technically think that that's Samurai, maybe?
No. But now we could. But at the time, when that was released,
fair enough.
There was no other Power Ranger team before Mighty Morphin.
Fair enough.
So there's various reasons why this movie's in canon, but to sort of go back to Mike's original question about the suits are awful. They're awful. They are absolute crap because you can tell they're bulky and you can tell that they are difficult to move in. And, you know, Chris Evans, when he filmed the first Captain America movie, he was talking a lot about how stiff his first costume was and how it was very difficult to maneuver. And for the most part, we can't really see that in the movie. Yeah, the suit is like, you can tell it's sort of like a little bit limiting, but you don't really feel like his range of motion is impaired when he's doing the shield throwing or Hydra beating. Here you can really tell that they're uncomfortable, that whether it's them in the suits or their stunt doubles, you can tell that there's a lot of level of discomfort. And this seems to be like a trend. I also like, there's a very simple way to create the suits and recreate them in a movie format without turning them into armor. You literally can just use the Dr. K method of it's not spandex, it's fancy schmancy alien wear. Like, it's not like shows haven't done that before, right? But these suits are bulky. They don't move well, which is why most of the movie, they're not really in them anyway, right? I think there's only two suited fight. There's only two times we see them in suits, which is at the very, well, two and a half maybe. Like, when they initially fight with the crows and ooze, huh?
They fight the oozlings.
Yep. And then at the end when they're in the Zords.
Yeah.
But they don't really fight morphed. The closest we get to a quote-unquote morphed is like when they're wearing their little ninjetti cover.
No, they fight the Uselings.
But morphed. Yeah, no, they do. Yeah.
Which I didn't realize until I was watching. There's so many like weird little fart noises during that fight. And I was like...
Oh, we'll get to that.
That was God. Distracting.
The music was also kind of distracting, but...
Yeah. Yeah. I have thoughts about the suits as well.
Go for it. Lay it on.
First and foremost, because I got the poster hanging up on my wall just because I can interchange different posters and I just wanted to put stuff with my Power Ranger collection in my room. But I always hated the Pink Ranger helmet for this movie. I always thought that the weird little like curly cues on the side of it, like, I thought that was weird. But the big thing that I really did not like was that they put the symbols on the middle of the chest because, you know, you watch the show and like, it's, you know, they literally just have diamonds on their chest, but every piece of merchandise that you bought back in like 93 up until Zeo, they had that symbol of the coin on there, whether or not it was dinosaur or Ninjetti or whatever. Saban really wanted to put that emblem on there like it was a Superman S or something. And they finally get to do the movie and it's like, oh yeah, we're going to put those on there. And I just thought, it would look cleaner if they just didn't have those. And you can barely make out, you know, what it looks like on there anyways, because there's not really any close-up shots of the chest, unless like it's maybe like 1 or 3 seconds at the longest that you get to see them. They don't look detailed. It messes up an already muddy look
to me. Yeah, it's a fair point.
What did you think about the so they do technically 2 morphs, mm-hmm. but only one of them is the true morph, where they actually pull out the morphers and do the morph. What did you think of that morph sequence compared to how it was? All right, Ben's already farted at it or stuck his tongue out at it.
2 thumbs what? Way, way down to the ground.
I literally can't say the words that I have written in my notes.
Do they have a lot of bad words we're not allowed to say on the show?
Why was it out of order?
Thank you! Oh, that was so annoying and unnecessary.
So I'm going to
why the, Ryan Spicer?
The TV show morphing sequence looks better.
I will agree that the TV morph sequence is better, but I actually did like the this version for the one-off that it was. I did kind of actually like it a little bit, and I do agree. It was weird that it was out of order. I didn't.
What did you like about it?
I just like the how they just did the morph, and then like you would have like the coin kind of pop out, and then it would flash them into the suit, and they do like the pose and stuff like that. I actually kind of like that little sequence. Whereas when they morph, you just have them inside the morpher doing the thing, and sometimes you see maybe like the Red Ranger turn into the Red Ranger a little bit. So kind of seeing them do the morph and then actually be in their outfit immediately after they do their call, I actually did like that a little bit.
It's definitely a precursor to what the morphing sequences became in the Disney era, where it's the more thing more like where you see them like actually put the suit on or whatever, right?
My
first thoughts went to Dino Thunder on that.
Yeah, but that does make it good. Like the thing about the morphing sequence in the TV show, and you can say this about the Disney morphing sequences as well, which are obviously the descendants of what we saw here in the movie. They're at least snappy, and they feel like business is about to pick up, right? You're like, this is going to start of the comeback kind of thing, right? This was just like, they're saying words and holding out a thing, and something's happening. Like, even the actors weren't buying into the fact that, okay, here we go.
Here's the other thing. When they do the call-outs and the posing and everything, that the posing part is usually Sentai footage. Right. And it's sort of in because you sort of know that this is like it sort of makes more sense. I don't know how to explain this, but it makes more sense in the TV show than it does in the movies. Right. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's choreographed specifically or what it is. But in the show, when they're doing all the posing and they're like Ranger Blue and whatever it is. Right. It sort of makes more sense. But here, I don't know. It just looked awkward. And it was sort of like, give us a second, bad guys. Like, maybe because it's the way it's filmed. Because it's a movie that you're just sort of like, you sort of expect more from it. And you're like wondering, why are the bad guys waiting so long? Why they do all their posing and all of their...
Part of it also, I think, is there was nothing special about the morphing sequence. The reason that the one in the TV show and the Disney and... It even starts happening in like Zeo, right? Where they like you see them put the helmet on during the morphing sequence. Mm-hmm. Is like the background changes and there's sound effects and there's special mm-hmm. music and there's effects, right? Whereas this was literally just a close up on the person that goes and holds out a morpher, right? There was nothing special going on in the background. There was no like special camera angles. Yeah, it didn't feel like it was a special moment, right? Like their first morph on the movie screen. Like there should be explosions and like people doing a line dance in the background and the Pope in the corner playing the banjo. Like
it felt anticlimactic. Yeah,
it's just like they're morphing.
It's like oh, we're like 20 minutes into this movie and they haven't morphed yet. We got to get on this.
Like they spend the first 10 minutes doing extreme sports. So. Yeah,
skydiving followed by a afternoon of rollerblading. Also, it probably would have been out of place, but I mean, they could have done like the, you know, the Super Sentai, like, you know, colored explosions in the background, maybe, like, or some variants of that. You know how like they have like red behind.
Oh, I'm not even talking, but that's when you've got the whole team assembled at the end, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about like when they're actually going Mastodon. Like, there's in the TV show, there's like the morpher around them, and there's lightning, and then there's the special music, and like later on when you get into like Zeo, there's like the change, and you see the helmet form around them, and when you get into
In Space has that too.
In Space has that. When you get to like Jungle Fury, they're doing backflips and kata, and there's all kinds of like mystical animals around them. They were just stood in a quarry. There was no special lighting. That's where
the obsession with the quarries came from, guys. It all started with the movie. There was no special.
There's nothing special about it.
That's been a trope since Go Ranger in 75 with the quarries.
Yeah, but the point being, sorry.
Yeah, you're right. It was like the main place that they filmed was a quarry, and it's like, gee, I wonder if that was helping.
The second word of the title of this movie is
Morphin.
Yeah. So when they do the morphin, make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Especially if they're going to do it twice in the movie.
There's not an awful lot of Power Rangers in this Power Rangers movie.
I was okay with that.
Thoughts on the movie version of the command center?
It's going to be the Ben's response to all the questions. I hope you realize that by now.
Either that, or we're going to spend like 5 minutes bleeping my first sentence of every answer.
So here's like, the thing I will say. I appreciate, the only thing I appreciate about it is that it's brighter. At the same time, however, it felt really cramped. And I think it's probably because of that, because like the command center from the TV show, like it has other rooms, we know this, but it looks sort of dark and it feels bigger than it's supposed to be. And I think part of it is because the Rangers' mission is bigger than themselves, and that's supposed to like symbolism or whatever. Here it looks really cramped, like they don't have enough room to go anywhere or do anything.
I'm gonna say a line here, and I want to see if you all agree with me.
Okay.
The movie suffers from the fact you can see the budget.
I want so hard not to agree with you, but I can't.
It's so accurate, it hurts.
I have to agree with you, even though that hurts to agree to.
It hurts, and I'm in actual physical pain right now. But
God.
Like, it's just like they looked at somebody and went, yeah, just throw some money at it.
Is that not enough? Here's more.
Well, we know for a fact that the movie actually went over budget, right?
So the budget, according to IMDb, was an estimated $20 million.
Right.
Which is
the pro. And I think I can sum up the movie's entire, I can sum up the entire issue of the movie in one sentence. It couldn't decide what it was. Mm-hmm. It felt like at times it was trying to be the TV show.
Yep.
And at times it was trying to be the movie. At times it was trying to be like, oh, look at all this cool stuff we've got. And at the other times, there were stupid cartoon sound effects and fight scenes.
I think the other part of it is the movie also didn't know if it wanted to be its own separate thing or part of the bigger universe, because it seems like for the most part this movie failed at the fact that it was trying to appeal to people that had never heard of Power Rangers.
And also keep in mind, for a movie that's an hour 35 minutes, you also have two storylines running at the same time too. You have the storyline of the Rangers looking for the great power to defeat Ivan Ooze to save Zordon. And then, obviously, Ivan Ooze's plot to use the parents of Angel Grove to help him take over the world by digging up his exoskeleton Zords. And
which we also absolutely could have lost. You absolutely could have lost the B-plot.
And there was a subsection to the B-plot, which was the kid with the Air Jordan hat trying to save
Fred. His name is Fred.
Yeah.
His name is mentioned like twice. Yeah.
His name is Annoying Child.
He was embarrassed that his dad didn't skydive right at the beginning of the movie. I was like,
yeah, that was dumb.
See, also, I'm
confused. And maybe because I sort of watched the first half of the movie and then took a break because I suffered so much and then like went back and watched the second half. But
I don't blame you.
I was very confused by the fact. So let's talk about the ooze. Okay. Can we talk about the ooze? Because the ooze brainwashed the parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they go to the factory, he's like, oh, I need more ooze. But then, so did he dig up the CGI Zords or did he build them and infuse them with the ooze?
He built them up. They dug them up. Bear in mind, they dug up both of those Zords in less than a day.
Time
in this movie is screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they dug up the Zords, they built the Zords.
Wait, they dug them up and they built them?
They reassembled them.
Okay, reassembled. Okay.
They were like in a box and then they
Give you an idea about time in this movie and preemptive, that's not how science works on this, right?
Right.
Ivan Ooze is dug up in the middle of the day. Right? The moment he is dug up, the Power Rangers get a bleep on their communicators.
Right, and then they show up and
they teleport to the command center, have a 3-minute conversation, teleport back, and it's nighttime.
Yep.
They teleport back to the command center.
No, they fight the stuff, and then they have to run back to the command center.
No, hang on. Then they go back... Sorry. They morph. It gets to from about 6 in the evening. Over the course of the morph session, it's about midnight.
It took 4 hours.
Everything's just darker, right? They have to walk back to the command center from the middle of Angel Grove, which takes less time than teleporting there, apparently, because it's still nighttime. Then they teleport out of the command center to the other planet, to another planet, where it's early in the morning.
That's the whole time relativity thing, and what.
Then they walk. They have one fight. They walk for about 2 minutes. It's dark again. They go through the Ninjetti system, the thing. It's midday at that point. Then it's dark again before they start walking down the thing.
Oh, yeah, because we had to see the sunset.
Yeah. Then, by the time they've walked from...
I thought that was sunrise.
Is it sunrise?
Oh, it was sunrise.
Yeah, that's a sunrise because they did the Ninjetti ceremony at night.
Because they did the Ninjetti ceremony at night. And then,
No, I'm talking about before they get to the Ninjetti ceremony.
It's like afternoon.
Anyway, then from the Ninjetti ceremony to the Great Wall. Bear in mind, all the time they're on this other planet, Zordon is dying, and not once do they run.
Right.
They're just walking the whole time.
But they keep reminding us Zordon doesn't have much time.
Not once they move anything past. Ooh. They couldn't even go up to They just, I'm not sure what that was all about. Can you tell them on painkillers?
But no, I think we get the point that the pacing is just ridiculous. Half the time, it's ridiculous. I also have a really ridiculous note here. Hold on.
But in the time it's taken, the Power Rangers one day on the other planet. Ivan Ooze has won all the kids in Angel Grove over. Sorry, he's taken over a toxic plant to produce the ooze, bottled the ooze, packaged the ooze, wooed all the kids in Angel Grove to give it to their parents. All of their parents have interacted with it. They've come back to the construction site. They've dug up like 8 or 9 pieces of thing and reassembled them and goosed them up and done all this other stuff, and Ernie's is in a complete mess, like Lord of the Flies.
Gotta give Ooze credit. He knows how to
get stuff done.
Get stuff done, yeah.
And before he does any of that, he traps Rita and Zed in a snow globe.
Makes perfect sense. You got to get rid of the, you know, competition, quote unquote.
Yep. Time in this movie is scuffed.
I mean, there's a lot of things that are scuffed in this movie, including the fact that, like, they find this random, what is it? They find a manhole dump, a new dumpster thing. That's what I called it. And then instead of, like, calling a scientist or the archaeology department, they just decide to, right, you know, lift it and open it. Right. And I'm like...
All right, but let's be honest. That is fairly in canon with dumb people in Power Rangers, because that's what happened with Rita.
But there's a reason I brought this up, because my note here, it says this is why Angel Grove has an abandoned warehouse district.
Yeah.
Nobody is competent.
That's why the quarry's there in the first place, because they keep doing stuff like that. Oh, we have to rebuild.
Mike, what was your question again?
I didn't ask a question. I just brought up the fact that there's two plots, and it just kind of went into this whole thing.
It was a whole thing. I like to think that, because it's so funny that they're like, oh man, Zordon doesn't have much time. So Dulcea takes them up to do the whole Ninjetti ceremony, which is at nighttime. They literally started walking.
They just stay there.
They stay there. I like to think that they got their brand new pajamas and they were like, all right, we're going to sleep until morning. And then like sunrise came up and they were like, all right, I'm refreshed. Put on the. Yeah. And like, we'll get go. Like, it's sunrise by the time that they get to like walking down the thing that Dulcea can't go now, because then she'll like.
Age as quickly as Zordon.
And I'm like, okay.
Because, sure, plot.
I can't go to this part of the planet. Sorry. Why? Reasons. So,
by the power of flood convenience.
Yeah.
But
to be fair, they look like very comfy pajamas, though.
They do look actually really comfy. That's probably the only compensation they got for having to suffer in those ugly metal leather suits. Here, wear pajamas.
Yay. It's breezy in here.
So, we talked about the plot.
We haven't even started, really, but go off.
Thoughts on Ivan Ooze. One of the biggest highlights of the film was him being on screen hamming it up.
I have one problem, and I he's quippy, but it's sort of like, we're going to throw it out as many 90s quips and references and random things as we can, even though it makes zero sense for this character to know any of these things. Like, what was he doing? Catching up on the last 3,000 years of history by, like, watching VHS tapes while everybody was picking up a Zord?
I mean... That was probably my favorite moment of the entire movie as an adult, was when he was talking about the things that he missed.
Bunch reunion.
Yeah, so he listed
the reunion. I was like,
listed this in order. While destroying the command center, he lists missing the Black Plague, the Spanish Inquisition, and the Brady Bunch reunion. And it's that one there that goes, wait. Is the Brady Bunch reunion that bad that you have to put it with the Black Plague and the Spanish Inquisition?
To be fair, that is the most evil out of the three. So
I'd like to go on record and say that's not factually true.
Yeah,
just saying.
See, as an adult, I was pretty annoyed by this because it felt like the thing is like Ivan Ooze was menacing enough, in my opinion, that you didn't need to make him quippy. I think that actually was the only misstep with the character. Like, especially because the references he made no sense. Like, it was just like he was trapped in 3,000 years. He doesn't even know what a television is, but he knows what the Brady Bunch reunion is. Like, come on. I get that it's just references for the kids to go, ha, 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 but...
That felt more for the adults. But...
See, that's just annoying then.
I thought it was funny. I like that.
By all means.
I can just imagine.
I like the fact. Here's the thing, right? I don't think the problem is that he was quippy. The problem is what he was quipping about.
Yes.
Right? If he'd have been more observational, and if there had been more going on in the movie that he could have been like actually referencing what's going on in his field of view and quipping about that, it wouldn't have been a problem, right? if like when he was fighting, if he had a fight with the Rangers and he started quipping at what the Rangers were doing, like that's different to being like, ah, random pop culture reference from person that doesn't know pop culture.
Yeah. And I think he actually does some of those quips when he actually does fight the Rangers with the Zords.
And when that's when it works. When he's making fun of the Rangers, it's hilarious.
But that's when you're not paying attention to him because he's a giant CG monster that looks like poop.
he did that thing where...
at the beginning. Oh, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
I mean, he did have that line. He's like, have you hugged your Zord today?
I will say that, like, there in the beginning where he first meets the Power Rangers or when he's making fun of Zordon, that's when it worked. When he was saying, oh, the boys are back in town and we're the bad guys and things like there were just things that I'm like, this is a 90s, like, it was just unnecessary because here's the thing. Sorry, Brian, let me just finish this one thought. Sure. If you take the quippy BS and you give it to Goldar and, you know, the non-kosher section of this movie, then that could have worked, right? Because it would make a little bit more sense for the pig guy and Goldar to make those ridiculous quips and Ooze to go, oh, shut up. Yeah. But
it's why in season 3 that we'll get to in next season, when they introduce Rito, it works so well because Rito feels like he has a frame of reference for all of that sort of stuff. Whereas someone like Ivan Ooze doesn't. It would be like be like Rita coming out of her dumpster for the very first time going, lol, BRB, WTF,
LOL. I can't believe LOL. That is the premiere of the new season of Buffy.
I sure love those New Kids on the Block.
Exactly.
You know, step by step, ooh, babe. You know, like, what are you doing?
Like, that it doesn't make sense. Like, Ooze, he to me, he's a very observational person. For him to make observational, localized humor is right. For him to make pop culture references, it's not really right.
Like, I doubt that he, like, the first thing that he did was turn on the radio and go, man, Thin Lizzy rocks. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he would be a Thin Lizzy guy.
I mean, sure. The boys are back in town. All right.
But let's be honest, right? And we keep bringing it up. Ivan Ooze, as a character, while he was brilliantly performed and his prosthetics were great and all that kind of stuff, he was just an excuse for gross-out humor. That's all it was.
Yep.
Yeah, I liked how he was also able to go into the master of disguise as like the little wizard guy to do the sales to the kids.
It looked just like him.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The one time he actually disguised himself was the security guard at the beginning.
Yeah.
Right? When Kimberly just turns around to a normal member of the public and goes, you haven't seen a morphological being around here anywhere, have you? Way to keep it cover, girl.
That was the one chance to get Paul Freeman out of makeup, and they didn't take it.
Yeah, they did.
Was that Paul Freeman?
Yeah.
Was it?
No, that was a different actor.
Because
it looked a lot like him.
That did not look like Baylock to me.
Yeah, that was a different actor because he was impersonating one of the security guards that he put to sleep.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I think he was impersonating the guard that actually was coming with the coffee. So,
well, that answers that question then.
Sorry, Paul Freeman.
There's nothing that you can't own that I can't take away.
Also, somebody want to clarify his plan to me? Was it just like take over the world kind of a plan?
Yep.
Pretty much.
Okay, yeah. So then I have a question. He just enslaved a whole bunch of people, right?
Why not just enslave the rest of the world? Yeah.
No. That's the second question. The second question is, why does he tell his newly enslaved population to go jump into the freaking...
He's an idiot.
Ooh.
I mean, he's an idiot.
Because he's got his Zords. He's got his play toys, and that's what he really also, wanted the parents funny enough, for.
The Zords managed to not come close to harming a single human.
Destroyed like, a couple cars, but
no, yeah. No, no, no. But here's the thing. Yeah, it destroyed the cars. But if you watch the CGI, right, it specifically misses every single person. And even when he's, like, about to, one of the Zords is about to, like, step on somebody, like, it's very, like,
there's the one point where, like, I think Aisha's bear sword gets thrown into a building.
Yeah, but we don't really see any people. It was the abandoned building.
Oh, no, I'm well like aware we don't see though. People, but you never do.
It was the abandoned building district.
Yeah.
I will say I did like that because the fact that, you know, Power Rangers is part of the whole tokusatsu, like, family of things. I did appreciate, because we don't really, we get it, but we don't get it the way that, like, you would get it in, like, a Godzilla film. I did appreciate that, like, we did kind of get that at the very beginning of the third act, where, like, everybody's running from, you know, the Ivan Ooze's CG...
Ectomorphicons.
Yeah, thank you, Ectomorphicons. And that did kind of feel like, you know, something that you would see in like Ultraman or Godzilla. And I was like, that's a nice little touch. You know, I did like that because that's the way I'd be like, all right, we're going to do this like Godzilla's coming to town. So that felt okay.
See, I actually didn't. I think part of it, because the monster were so obviously CGI'd, I didn't get that Godzilla feeling. If anything, I had the opposite, where it's just like very obvious that the audience is reacting to something that isn't there. Which yeah.
I think it was, it made sense when it was the TV reports. Like yeah. It looked good when it was the reporter that was cutting yeah. in and out. And like, okay. Where are the Power Rangers?
On another planet. although I have to admit, the corny thing that they did was the way they got rid of Ivan. It's like, how did you know that the comet was coming?
They mentioned something about a comet at the beginning of the movie, don't they?
I don't think so.
They try and save the observatory by skydiving.
Yeah, because the comet is coming in a couple of days.
Yep. They observed that, and I guess, I'm sure that there's other scientists out there that exist outside of what Angel Grove is.
Other than the fact that that comet wasn't clearly a comet. Because it was on fire. Mm. And comets are cold. That's not how science works.
Yay, we got it.
That's the second one for the movie. Oh but God, I could be here all day.
All right, so I know something that Sasha was saying before we hit the record button. Fight scenes.
Why
do
y'all go first?
No, you wanted to bring up the fight scenes.
All right.
Because for the record, my notes are now done, so it's free range for you guys.
My note about the fight scenes is like, oh, it's the Tommy show again. But
that, yes, accurate. But here's the thing. The fight scene, specifically the one in on the planet, right, when they're going into that temple, when they're fighting the like monsters that were like in the walls of the temple, is so badly shot and choreographed. It is insulting to viewers everywhere. First of all, characters move without us seeing what they were doing beforehand. Like there's a moment where Rocky is fighting with a monster in front of a lake, and we never actually see him throw the monster in the lake or move out of the way. And then the next thing I know is he's helping Adam with his monster. Right, and everything is shot, or Billy, right? Like, Billy jumps down to help Rocky or Adam or somebody, right? And then 2 seconds later, he's back on top of a rock helping Tommy with something. So that's two. Three, the girls barely get to do any of the fighting. And when they do, 2 seconds later, they're screaming for help because they're trapped by the dinosaur monster. Or... Aisha accidentally gets trapped in like a little cave hole by the monster because she runs into it for safety. And like the one thing that Power Rangers did so amazingly and continues to do to this day is the fact that you see everybody fighting. And even if everybody doesn't start out on equal footing with their abilities in fighting, everybody gets their chance to fight the monster and show themselves off. Nobody is relegated to the damsel in distress. But here, there's at least two or three moments where Kimberly needs to be rescued by somebody, or Aisha needs help. And then, like, Adam needs help too, but it was a little bit, like, it was different. But yeah, the fight scene sucked. The Zord fight was just so unbelievably awful. I don't even know where to start with it. Because it was just like, it was very clear that whoever did this, it didn't feel like it was choreographed, right? Like, maybe it's because, I don't know, early 90s, but like you know what? No, they don't get to use that excuse, because Jurassic Park managed to film amazing scenes with fighting, with running from a dinosaur, with dealing with dinosaur shenanigans, and you feel like there is a dinosaur, even if you obviously know this is an animatronic thing or a CGI or whatever, right? Here, yeah, it's CGI, but it's not choreographed. There's no movements that naturally progress into each other to create a fight. So yeah, the fight scene sucked. Thank you.
I mean, you're not going to hear any argument from me, because I think all of the fights, like even in Mighty Morphin, most of the fight scenes suck. It's not really until we get to the Disney era that things start to pick up.
It tends to vary. I think there are some moments where like the first episode of, maybe it's just nostalgia talking, or maybe it's just because like it's been a while since I had seen like proper hand-to-hand fighting choreography with Power Rangers, because usually it's like wire work and everything. But in the original, you see like everybody has a different style of fighting, right? But you see that there's some choreography, there's some direction of how this fight is going and who does what. Like, oh, here Billy uses the playground to twist, or Kimberly uses a pole to jump.
Right, but that doesn't make it good choreography.
That's fair, fine. There is at least a flow. I think the fight choreography honestly isn't that bad.
And here's the thing, right? I'm talking about the actual, like, Power Ranger fight scenes. Because I think the unmorphed stuff did a better job of conveying personality, right? Mainly because
I'll give you that.
The Sentai stuff, mainly because the Sentai stuff wasn't conveying the same characters. It was conveying completely different characters. Right. But those characters weren't good. If you watch Zyuranger, they're not great. They're just all kind of the same person, and there's a girl.
I will say the main core five, it feels like they're all like the lesser four are always like saying like, "Hey, Geki, like let's
yeah," like because that's always the way their fighting style is more about their weapon than their actual combat, which is less emphasized in Power Rangers, right? Because they only bring the weapons out as a last resort. And I think one of the things I noticed about the fight scenes in the movie is they try to emulate a lot of what they saw in the Sentai. You see the same style of kicks and the same style of spinning and wire work and things like that. And so what happened was you had a lot of personality when they were fighting unmorphed, like Kim and Billy doing the backflips and all the quips and everything that were going on. But the moment they morphed, it was back to that very stoic Sentai footage.
And you see that even when they're fighting in their Ninjetti gear as well, which is the fight I had the most problem with.
The other thing with the Ninjetti gear is they get these Ninjetti powers and they don't actually use any powers except for the Ninjetti finishing corkscrew kick that Tommy does.
And then the whole resurrecting Zordon thing.
Well, no, but that's not even like, I'm talking about in fights. We're talking about fight scenes, right? Like when you go forward to season three, and I'm sorry, I know you don't like me calling forward to other seasons, but like when you look at the ninja fights they have in season three, they're the best thing about those seasons.
Well, in all fairness, this movie was supposed to kickstart into the third season. Yeah. So but like because we did get, you know, because the Ninjetti outfits come back. Those Zords come back, and the Tango Crows come back. those are the three things that actually do come back because they're supposed to be the lead into it. So
I just had a thought, by the way. So we got Dulcea in this movie, right?
Yep.
If you say the word Dimitri, I'm leaving the call.
No.
Good.
Why didn't we get Ninjor in this movie?
Ninjor didn't exist in this movie.
I know, but like Ninjor was the reason in the...
Because Ninjor was they had what they had to come up with to replace Dulcea.
Actually, I think it would be the other way around. I think Dulcea was what was used to replace Ninjor because she was the one who kind of technically guided him to that great power from where she was. Whereas Ninjor was the one who created the great power.
Guys,
and I don't think they could have used it.
Canon.
If Dulcea was created to replace Ninjor, Ninjor would be the one in the movie and Dulcea would be the one in the TV show. Dulcea was created first, because remember, they are filming this movie during season two.
Yep.
Yeah.
Once the movie goes pear-shaped, then they realize we're going to have to retell the origin story of the ninja powers, but we can't just redo the movie because the movie went so fantastically badly. How do we now give them the ninja powers? Therefore, they brought in Ninjor. It is a simple progression. A to B to C. Part of the problem with early Power Rangers is they weren't thinking things through. They weren't trying to make things twisty and turny. Literally, A didn't work, so we tried B. B didn't work, so we tried C. All the way through to Ninjor.
Yeah. And it all, I mean, at least it helped them because Ninjor's character was in the Sentai that they took from.
Yes.
So it ended up working out for them in the end that way anyways.
Well, there's a chance that he wasn't in the footage that they were getting from Cocky Ranger by the time that they were filming anyways, so.
Anyway. Coincidence then. They lucked out.
Anyways.
The point being, something like the Ninjor character would have been easy enough for them to recreate in American footage. Because they didn't have to do everything they did with Ninjor. They just lucked out getting what they got with Ninjor. But yeah, anyway, long story short, the fight scenes were just fantastically bad.
Yep.
So one thing that I should note, no surprise here, Jason Dare Frank did many of his own stunts, especially in the fight scenes. That's not a surprise. But Johnny Young Bosch did all of his own ninja suit stunts because his stunt actor had broken his leg during training. So Adam was the one, or Johnny was the one who was actually doing all of his own fight stuff especially in the Ninjetti outfits.
Damn.
Just another reason why he's the greatest of all time.
Was it? So obviously you mentioned Dulcea. So one thing some people would know now is that Mariska Hargitay. Yep, she was actually filming because Gabriel Fitzpatrick actually had to leave because she had a cyst that needed to take time. She was fired over the Christmas holiday, and then Gabriel Fitzpatrick took it back. Interestingly enough, what future Ranger would audition for the role of Dulcea?
Catherine Hillard.
Catherine Sutherland.
Wow.
That's the character she played. But yeah, Catherine Sutherland actually auditioned for the role, and she almost got it, but she was considered too young for the role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting learning about that. Oh, and going back to Paul Freeman real quick about Ivan Ooze and some of the stuff that he put out, like being the pop culture relevant. The line about the Brady Bunch was actually an ad lib that he put out there, and he requested that it stay in. Just like how when we have the infamous line from Adam Park saying, "I'm a frog."
Yep.
That is also something that Johnny Young Bosch really requested to the director that he wanted to keep in the film because he felt strongly about it. Yeah. So
one of my notes that I have here that I really want to bring up is the soundtrack for this movie absolutely slaps. Like, the soundtrack, like, if you pick up the CD that they released, absolutely slaps.
Interesting fact. Red Hot Chili Peppers do a song called, they do a cover of Higher Ground. Mm-hmm. It was actually used for the unaired pilot episode of Mighty Morphin.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the soundtrack that you can buy is as an absolute banger. Like, just...
And not only that, but, like, when you listen to that soundtrack, it actually works with the scenes that they put it with, too. Like, the skydiving
scene.
It's
even got, like, a Ron Wasserman track on there as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
As it should be.
As so. God intended.
Well, I think he wrote it when you were going for the end credits. There's that Alpha 5 song, the Alpha song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the one that was written by Ron Wasserman, too.
No, the song on the soundtrack that's written by Ron Wasserman is Cross My Line.
Mm. Then I forget who did the Alpha 5 one, because the Alpha 5 one was Power J. Yeah, that actually was a pretty good song. I like that one.
Nothing to do with Alpha in this movie is good.
Somewhat related to, because he mentioned the Red Hot Chili Peppers in the pilot episode or the demo episode, which I know was called Dino Rangers. There's a song that they use when they morph to called Electric Eye by Judas Priest. That's one of my favorite songs that I don't know whenever I would be able to bring that back up. So I just thought I'd mention that. That was awesome, seeing that footage. But let's see. I know Red Hot Chili Peppers did a song for the album. We have Van Hagar. Hagar. It's Van Hagar.
According to the soundtrack, it's Van Halen.
But he's basing it off who the singer is.
Yeah.
Right. But it is on the soundtrack as Van Halen.
Right. I still like to call the Hagar years as that, but it's Halen. But
the reason why I'm persistent about that is fans may not know the difference between the different areas of the, like, non-fans may not know the difference between the different areas of the band, so they'll be out there actually searching Van Hagar on, like, Google or something.
Why can't I find them?
Yeah. Interesting. So this would probably explain why the film was kind of a train wreck. According to Paul Freeman, the movie was originally...
I'd like to point out at this point that Mike's once again reading off Ranger Wiki.
Actually, I'm on IMDb.
Same thing.
Yeah. The movie was originally going to be done in the style of the TV show before the producers changed their minds and decided to put more resources into the production. So if they had actually probably...
That much is obvious.
Yeah, so if they'd actually kept the course they were going, they might have actually had a much better product overall.
They would have had a different product.
Yeah.
They would have had a different product. I'm not sure it would have been better.
You know what happened with this movie? It's the same thing that happened with Star Trek The Motion Picture, pretty much. They were going to try and do something that was more akin to the TV show, and then they were like, let's throw a budget at it and do different things with the suits and yada, yada, yada. So... if you know the story about that, like, because they were going to do New Voyages, but then they were like,
it's not so much about the amount of money, it's where that money's going to, right? Like, if the money had gone to, like, I don't know, I feel like the majority of the money went to, like, oh, we can use computer graphics now, and maybe instead it went into doing something else. Because I'm not, like, paying the actors properly what they're worth and, you know, making sure that the writing is good and putting money towards, I don't even know what.
Fight choreography.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, suit design, because it was just sort of like, just slap some armor on it.
Yeah, those suits were 40 pounds.
And they look it too.
The Ranger suits for 40 pounds, and apparently it actually caused a couple of them to have back injuries.
I'm not even a little surprised.
Yeah.
Well, something that makes me laugh about the CGI in this movie is this movie came out in 95, the same year as Toy Story.
and 2 years after Prince of Egypt.
Yeah. So it's like, wait, did Prince of Egypt come out in 93?
Isn't it 93? Did I make a mistake? I could be wrong.
That felt like it came out in like 96, 97.
Yeah. I think Prince of Egypt was after Power Rangers and Toy Story. Yeah. But
Toy Story came out the same year as this movie, And
oh, it was, sorry, 98. But
also keep in mind, look at who's doing them. Yeah. Toy Story was done by Pixar and was a straight up animated film, whereas Power Rangers was done by 20th Century Fox, who really wasn't in the CGI department per se.
And I mean, they still were when you get to the 2000s either.
Yeah, so they've never been, like, CGI was never Fox's strong suit.
Right, but here's the thing. If you don't know something, you either consult with the people that do, or you do what you can, right? Like, I know it's different.
But here's the thing, is aged CGI is forgivable.
That's true.
Right? It's just...
And it actually, I can
like see... Even if you watch, like, Jurassic Park now, you can go like, I can see the pixels. Right? Jurassic, but that's no excuse for making a bad movie.
Yeah.
Look at other movies that came out in 95. The Basketball Diaries, Desperado, like the GoldenEye, Jumanji, 12 Monkeys, Apollo 13, Bad Boys, Usual Suspects. Brilliant movies all coming out in the same year. The problem isn't they made a movie with bad CGI. The problem is they made a bad movie. Everything about this movie stinks.
And I can say this because I watched it on Blu-ray. Because obviously they did some restoration to the film. It looks, I mean, the CGI does look a little cleaner, you know, on the Blu-ray version, but you could still tell that it's a product of its time of 1995 for Fox at the same time.
Right. And I will never blame a movie for coming out and you go back and you watch and the CGI looks dated. It just happens, right?
Right.
You can't really blame people for... You can blame people for bad CGI, not dated CGI. You can blame people for a bad movie. And they put out a bad movie.
So, here's a question for y'all. Because, obviously, this movie was going to get bad reviews from, like, film critics, you know, already, but how much more do you think it would have been derided if instead of CG and like trying to, you know, be on the cutting edge of technology, they had actually done like, you know, rubber suit monsters and like what they did with like an actual person in a suit doing that? Like, do you think it would have looked better, worse? Like, what do you think about that?
Given the fact that the TV show was able to have that, and we know that later seasons did like a mix of, you know, human bad guys and then costumes and things like that, I think, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. But I think if they had done something akin to the film techniques that had been perfected by that time, I think it would have. I don't think it would have saved this movie, but I think it would have helped just. Bit with that last bit ending, because the fight, but the issue even of in and of itself isn't even the CGI, because like Ben said, you can forgive bad CGI because it's right. A product of a time and things like that, but the problem isn't so much the fact that the CGI looks like bad CGI, it's more the fact that it doesn't feel like it fits. And the Zord fight choreography was just very, granted, like it's Zord fights aren't really, granted, it's not my favorite part of Power Rangers, but even there were some really good Zord fights, even in the original Power Rangers. And it just like, this wasn't it.
The other thing to kind of keep in mind as well is that there's no Sentai at all.
Yeah,
to work with in this film. This is 100% original,
and that's okay.
And even though like we end up getting the Sentai version of the Zords, you know, in the upcoming season, you know, it might have been a little bit too hard for them to maybe try to get that suit just for making Fair. The movie. They probably couldn't work out a deal with Toei to make it happen. So you have to kind of look at it from that perspective, that this is 100% original, and they probably decided, you know, it's probably in the best interest of the film to go the CGI route rather than go with the suit route. Although, right. could the suit route would have made things better? Like Sasha said, 2020 is hindsight, you know. You don't know.
Again, the main, there's so many other problems in this movie
yeah.
that even if the Zord fight sequence was better, it still wouldn't have, you know, made or break the reviews of this movie. The yeah. movie would have still sucked, but somebody, you know, maybe there was a note then it would have been like, this movie was terrible, but boy, was that Zord fight passable.
And not only that, but also look at it from the perspective of this. Look at where the fight ends. It ends in space. It worked out a little better to go with the CGI with that ending of taking out Ivanhoe's in space than it would have been if you tried doing it with the suits.
Fair-ish. I mean, to be honest, the only reason the fight ended in space was because they couldn't come up with a different way to defeat Ooze other than, you know, slamming him with a meteorite or something.
Yeah.
Yes, Ben.
Yes, hello, Ben.
Doesn't matter if they did it CGI or marionette puppets or...
That would have been great.
Or like stop motion animation, Harryhausen style, or dudes in suits. If it was still this level of production, it would still look bad.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how the thing's done, if it's done well.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Having been in like a 72-hour film fest, I have seen literal like movies made with like paper cutouts that have had such unique and like interesting stories to tell.
Yeah.
That like it that's kind of the way it is for me with like video games too. It's like, look, because we have I swear I'm on point here. You can get a PS5 and have like the most cutting edge graphics that you want to, but like if the gameplay sucks, I don't care how realistic the pores are on the person's face. I could play a 2D game, you know, that's like literally just like an 8-bit like pixel, and like the story is really intriguing, and that's what sucks me in is the story.
Here my best example of this is Avatar. I don't care how pretty it looks. It's a crap movie.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a generic, boring plot I've seen 1,000 times over, and there's movies that did it better. There you go. But it looks pretty is not a good enough reason for me to watch a movie and suffer through 2.5 hours of it.
I can't believe Dances in this with case, Smurfs made $2 million.
There you go. Ben, that's a valid point. There's other... This movie, I think you said it best in the beginning when you said this movie wasn't sure what it wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that and many other reasons contributed to a rather subpar movie that didn't really flesh out or even really establish the characters. Like, if I'm watching this as a kid and I've never seen Power Rangers, but in the movie, I don't know their names.
Right.
And I don't remember them.
To be fair, it did feel kind of like what Endgame did, where it's like, hey, we're going to just take these characters and plop them down. But the problem is, like, you know, you didn't have all this other stuff in the theater to establish. And, well...
Endgame is different because Endgame...
You had 22 movies that build up to that.
Yeah. I see where you're going with that. Ryan, but the reason that I think it works in Endgame is because Endgame is not a movie that you watch if you've never seen a Marvel movie.
Right.
Right? But one of the things is like Power Rangers this movie was trying to appeal largely to a non-Power Ranger audience specifically.
Was it though?
I think to some extent it was. Otherwise, what that...
I wouldn't say it was trying to extend largely to a non-Power Rangers thing. But it was definitely targeting non-Power Rangers fans.
I mean, sure, it was. But I also know that every kid I knew that was a Power Rangers fan was losing their minds over this movie as well.
Right. So and we're not saying that isn't right. Yeah. What we're trying... When you make a release like that in the theater, right, you can't just rely on a televisual audience.
Right.
You have to appeal to people beyond that. And especially with the fact they'd originally planned this to be the beginning of season 3 to take that audience from the movie theater to the TV screen.
Right.
Right. And we're not saying that they weren't trying to make the TV show fans happy. But like you said, the TV show fans were already losing their mind.
Right.
But a lot of the decisions made in this movie were made to draw in non-fans. Why do you think Dulce is dressed the way she is?
Fair, that's a very fair point.
I mean, Critic makes a joke about it when it came to the Turbo movie.
Yeah. What I guess from my point of view, and like, and while I get like, yes, it's trying to bring in new, and I, your point is absolutely valid. From my perspective as a kid, like, and then you look at like just how Power Rangers was a household name by like 94. Everybody knew what it was, even if they hated it. And it
maybe just, here.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
So for me, it's like it was already a thing that was like it stopped traffic, you know, on the freeway in California. Right.
But you're saying for me as your personal, Sasha and I aren't talking about our personal experiences. Fair. We're talking about a corporate experience. Fair. We're talking about a larger experience. Gotcha. We completely agree with you on a personal level.
Right. Yeah.
As a Power Rangers fan, yes, you were already losing your mind. You didn't need any of the changes. Right. But a non-Power Rangers fan that may just be going to the movie theater and go, eh, what am I going to see today?
Okay, that's fair.
Because this is back in the time where, and I hate to keep doing this because I feel like the fuddy-duddy of the group, but this is back in the time where it was more common to just go to a movie theater and decide what you were going to see when you got to the movie theater.
I used to do that.
Right? It wasn't like, it didn't cost you $70 to go to the movie theater and it'd be a whole day out. It was right. Like, I fancy going to the movie theater. I'm going to spend $5 on a matinee and get a popcorn.
Right.
Right. So
a what lot am I going to do with the rest of my day?
Right. Yeah. So it's like a lot of the changes that were made back then were not only for people that had never seen Power Rangers before.
Right.
They were also made for an international audience. Right.
Yeah, that's fair.
That you got to bear in mind that you're not the only locus of a reference, a frame of reference, right? Everyone is going to be looking at it slightly differently.
Right.
It's the same reason now, like, I hate to reference another movie, but there's that joke in Hot Fuzz, right? Where it's like, oh, I'm on the police force. No, you're on the police service. Because corporate guidelines dictate that police force is too aggressive, right? That's how they were looking at Power Rangers, from a corporate structure. They weren't trying to make it just for fans. They were making it for fans and to pull in new fans.
Side note, is that why they called it Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles in the UK?
Yes, because ninjas were too violent.
Gotcha.
They also couldn't show Michelangelo.
Michael Jackson.
They couldn't also show Michelangelo using his nunchucks a lot.
I heard the
katana swords and the size they were fine with, but nunchucks too violent.
Yeah.
Well, nunchucks are scary. Didn't you know that?
Also, the single best weapon in Power Rangers history.
But what was it? But yeah. But like, and also to tag on that, it's like I forced my mom to take me to see Power Rangers when it hit the theater, like, because
your poor mother,
because Brian, you and I, we were the day oneers,
yes,
for the show. But like, my mom was there going like, I don't give a damn.
Yeah,
I don't give a damn.
I have a story as well.
I'm just making my son happy, you know.
Yeah, so okay, I have a story. So I remember begging my mom and dad to go see it in theaters, and they were just like, no. And like, I guess I begged and pleaded so much that they were like, look, we're busy, we have the twins to take care of, we're exhausted, your grandma's gonna take you. So I went with my grandma, and my grandma just sat there, and I swear, like, I didn't see what her face looked like the entire time, because I was just glued to the screen, because like 8-year-old me was just like, but, you know, she probably had no idea what the hell was going on. But she was nice enough to just be like, that was a very nice movie. Do you want to go get a toy afterwards? And like, she bought me a Blue Ranger figure afterwards as well.
Nice grandma.
Oh yeah. Best. Love her to death.
And I think you're kind of leading into the other point of what Ben and I were saying is that like the 5-year-old or 8-year-old, I don't know, however old you guys were when you saw this
movie. I was 8 because it came out in June of 95. So I was 8 years old when it came out.
Like, I was 7 turning 8.
Right. So like movies these days, especially like animated kid movies, try to do something for the adults and the kids because adults have to suffer with their kids being glued to Anna and Elsa for, you know, an hour and 30 minutes.
I mean, look at Toy Story. They put in some stuff in there for the adults in that one.
Right. But there was
You think Dulcea wasn't appealing to the dads?
All right. I don't know.
Look at the way she's dressed.
Fine, whatever. My point being is that, like, aside from Dulcea, there isn't really, and she's only in the movie for like 10 minutes. Like,
that owl is hot.
Fine, but like, you're not gonna go see a movie just for 10 seconds of a hot chick.
No, but what I'm saying is, if you're there with your kids,
that'll entertain you for 10 seconds, and you're looking at your watch again, like, okay, great, the hot chick's over now.
That's the way they think. That's the way they think. Back then.
This movie is so bad. But yeah, no, this movie's terrible. Mike, any other questions for the panel?
Nah, I mean, I threw my truckload of stuff at you guys. Brian's got his hand up.
I would be remiss if we didn't talk about one final thing.
And all right, everyone duck and cover real quick.
And that is how stupid it is that the final blow was literally Aisha hitting the emergency button and then they need Ivan using the balls.
Perfectly 90s.
Yeah. Like,
that's Brian, that's 90s, man. Come on.
That's that is the perfect summation of everything this movie was trying to be.
It was a knee in the balls?
Yeah, it is. Like from the comedy sound effects during the fight scenes to the gross out humor with Ivan Ooze.
So many fart noises, man.
So yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like
I can't believe as a 33-year-old, I'm just sitting there like that's a lot of fart noises, but that was a lot of fart noises.
Well, with the fart noises, that was with like all the ooze stuff, right?
But the point is, right? Everything about this movie that encapsulates this movie is so, and it's the same with the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers series. Everything about it is so perfectly 90s. Right? It is like you can hold it up and go, this is the 90s incarnate. Right? And that's not good because we've come so far since then. And there's no other way to finish that movie than with a kick to the groin. Like, it's just not.
A kick to the groin and some fireworks.
And a poorly built comet that shouldn't be on fire.
And also like the fatal, like the explosion then fades into like it felt like they were trying to do at the very end of like A New Hope when the Death Star explodes, and like I don't know, the fade away into white was just kind of okay, that could have looked better, but whatever.
So I guess with that, it's time for, I think, everyone's favorite part of this episode, which is social media.
Oh, no, I thought the ending. The part where we could break out the whiskey.
Start with that.
No, that's after we do the social media and I hit the stop recording button.
I have some double.
So with that said, Sasha, where can the people find you on the social medias?
As always, you can find me on geekgirl101.tumblr.com. That is the best place to reach me and the best place to find me. Or you can just go on Twitter like a weirdo and at me at Geeky Kaplan. That's Kaplan with a K. After the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. And of course, geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com. Yes, everything has the word geek in some capacity in it.
All right. So, Ben, where can the people find you on social media? They can't.
All right, yeah, they can.
There's no social media. Got it. All right.
You can find me over on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find this show on Twitter at
@VFTG_PR.
You can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And one day I will get back to writing my columns about various Power Rangers seasons. But everything's kind of been on stop recently due to life, the universe, and everything. And you can find those over at
txhthockey.com/bens-journey.
Boom.
And then you can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. And yes, I know people, hold on. And of course, everything's on the website, txhthockey.com/VFTG. And for once, I actually wanted to change it up and not have me be the last person. So Brian, you get to be the last person to do social media.
Yay, hi everybody. So you can find me on Twitter at @OneDrunkGeek. We are doing a travel episode where we go up to Buffalo and try all kinds of awesome beers. Be on the lookout for that. That should be up soon. Check me out on castwavestudios.com, friend of the studio. We've got BGN episodes up there, dated back all the way back to 2012 that you can listen to our interviews and stuff like that. And you can also find me hanging out with good friend Sean Holmes whenever he's doing VR chat stuff, which is a lot of fun.
All right. So with that, Ben, take us out.
It has been. I'd like to point out that since I've watched this movie, I've had to binge watch good TV to get rid of it out of my head. And one of the things that I'm going to go watch later is Bill and Ted 3, because I love that movie. And that being said, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
Brian, that's your line.
Yes. And until our next more phenomenal episode, be sure to grab your ninjetti powers from a scantily clad lady that's also a barn owl.
May the power protect you.
Remember, it's not canon.
Woohoo!
It's not canon.